We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios and go Wildcats, go Wildcats. We are excited to be following a successful, victorious game. Actually, joining me in studio is Dr. Kathy Tynes, the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. So go Wildcats, Doc.
I am wearing my purple tonight.
You are wearing your purple. Very, I love that you're showing your school. The spirit of the entire organization, I guess.
Well, not only do I work at Northwestern, but that's my alma mater.
I didn't want to presume.
Yeah,
no.
I took my son on a college visit there. Just a couple weeks ago. It was exciting.
How wild is that?
He liked it. It was cool.
Yeah, I went to Northwestern briefly for grad school, and I went, yeah, but I'm gonna go do the stand-up comedy thing.
Hey,
did you do medical school there or undergrad?
Undergrad. U of I for med school.
Oh, well, also that one I finished.
There you go.
For undergrad. By the way, we're going to come back and talk some medical issues in the news, and we're going to talk about the announcement today by Alex Trebek that he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. We'll play some audio from that, and we want to find out a little bit more. I know people are talking about a lot of health issues in the news this week. I want to make sure people know that we're going to talk some important information about your well-being from our wonderful doctor, Kathy Tynes. She's got some insight into things that maybe patients, things that doctors wish their patients knew. And we'll also talk about, more stories. There has been testimony again in D.C. about vaccinations, and we want to find out about insulin help. I know you tipped us off about that a few weeks ago. Want to make sure people have that information again. If there are those of you battling diabetes and you want to make sure that, if you have to make a choice between stopping your medication because the prices have gone up, there is help for you. So we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. And actually, you can go to insulinhelp.org. I don't want to put that off for anybody who might need that right now. So it's insulinhelp.org if you want to give people some insight on that too before we go to the news. Doc?
Sure. So it's a clearinghouse for patient assistance programs. So there are a lot of drug manufacturers will provide reduced costs or even free medications for patients who can't afford it. So go to that website. It's got all the different types of insulin and the manufacturers there, and it tells you what kind of information you need to provide them so that you can qualify for assistance.
So those of you dealing with diabetes, make sure that you are informed on that too. So it's insulinhelp.org. We'll also, we're going to check in with our friends from the Irish American Heritage Center. Kathy O'Neill and Terry O'Connell will be in studio to talk about the St. Patrick's Day celebrations that are in the works. And of course, they've got everything planned out. It's always a great party.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Very fun. And then Adam Selzer will be in here in a little bit as well to talk about his new gangster Chicago tours. So he always has the best stories about Chicago. Some of them also a little, some ghosts involved.
Ooh.
Or at least the ghost stories.
Fun.
He is not necessarily a believer, but he'll tell you all the folklore and the history about those mythological places in Chicago. So we'll talk about that, like the Valentine's Day Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently dogs can really sense something in that area.
Interesting.
So that's coming up after the news. And of course, great conversation. We encourage you to join us anytime. You can call or text us at 312-981-7200. And that's how you join the conversation, because this is your conversation. Tom Hush producing the show tonight, making sure everything goes smoothly. He wants to see if I can go right up to the post. I have like 30 seconds. I've been trying to be much better about making sure that we get to the news on time. So those of you listening to the show, you get your news, you get your weather, your traffic, and your conversation when you expect it. So we're trying to be diligent about that. For over 30 years, Alex Trebek has hosted Jeopardy, entertaining us and actually enlightening us and educating so many of us on things that maybe we never even thought much about. And sadly, today he made an announcement that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It is Wellness Wednesday, and I want to take a moment with Dr. Kathy Tynes from Northwestern Medicine. She's the president of the Illinois State Medical Society and assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. And Dr. Tynes, did you have a chance to hear his, I haven't heard him make the announcement, but we heard from our guy Duffy, who said that it was really touching and the kind of thing that makes you stop and think about it. And I wanted to take a moment. Tom has the audio of his announcement.
Just like 50,000 other people in the United States each year, this week I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Now, normally the prognosis for this is not very encouraging, but I'm going to fight this. And I'm going to keep working, and with the love and support of my family and friends, and with the help of your prayers also, I plan to beat the low survival rate statistics for this disease. truth told? I have to, because under the terms of my contract, I have to host Jeopardy for 3 more years. So help me keep the faith, and we'll win. We'll get it done. Thank you.
Wow, what an incredible moment. And I had not heard that. And it is moving and touching and fierce. You know, that's an attitude that I know a lot of patients do need to have. My friend Christine Bloomer, who was diagnosed with colon cancer when she was very young, you know, the survival rate for her type of cancer and where she was 3%. And what she said was, you know, why not me? And that is the attitude you have to have going into it, don't you, doctor?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, attitude, support systems, your overall health when you're diagnosed, your functional status, how well you're able to get around and do physical activities. Those are all predictors of a better outcome or maybe a longer survival than others.
And the survival rate, as he mentioned, isn't great. When you see that, that's got to be such a blow. And I'm sure he's gone through this with his family and talked about it with his doctors. We talked a little bit, you and I, off the air about some of the risk factors. Well, first of all, I don't think people even really understand what the pancreas is and what its function is. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So the pancreas helps us digest our food, and it also produces insulin. So it produces a lot of enzymes that get secreted into our gut and help break down proteins, fat, carbohydrates, and help us get those back, all those nutrients into our bloodstream. And then the other function is making insulin. So you need your good functioning pancreas to avoid diabetes.
And as he mentioned, he's been diagnosed at stage 4. Are there any symptoms? Is there anything that people should be aware of? That I mean, there's so many. Obviously, you know, you think, well, I'm just getting older. I've got these aches and pains. So it's sort of hard to parse out what's what sometimes, even in your own body.
It's unfortunate that oftentimes it's missed when it could be curable. So if you catch a pancreatic cancer early, you can cure it by cutting it out, by doing surgery. And unfortunately, maybe 15-20% of the time is that the case. It really depends a lot on where the tumor is located. So that if it's located in the head of the pancreas where it intersects with your bile duct, it can cause a backup of your bile into your liver, which causes symptoms, causes jaundice, and it makes itself known earlier. If it's in the tail of the pancreas, unfortunately, it doesn't have that function. It's not going to press on any vital structures, and it can just grow and grow and grow until it presses on other things and causes pain. So pain is typically your first symptom, sometimes just unexplained weight loss. Suddenly just lost your appetite for no reason, that can be a symptom.
Right, and again, sometimes you're like, well, I'm really stressed, I don't feel really hungry. Mm-hmm. When you mention pain, where would that be located? Is it isolated?
Yeah, it would be in the upper abdomen, typically.
Upper abdomen, okay. Yeah, so, I mean, he has the right attitude. I'm guessing he has the right support system. That's important, too. I mean, he...
Absolutely.
You know, and that doesn't necessarily mean just because you have a lot of money or you're famous that you're going to have the right support system, or that, you know, because you look at somebody who is a celebrity and you go, oh, well, you know, I've been diagnosed with the same thing, but I don't have any chance. But they're so much more involved than just being rich and famous.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, having someone who supports you, you know, emotionally and who's able to drive you around and take you to your appointments that you need to go to and picks up your medication from the pharmacy. I mean, there's so many things that are involved in support that's, you know, not monetary.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to patients and they have concerns about, you know, what's the next step? What are some of the things that happen next when somebody has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer? Obviously they go see an oncologist next, and you see, you know, diet is important here as well. How you keep your strength up?
Yeah, absolutely. So eating high caloric foods, here's your opportunity to pig out. Whatever you want to eat and as much as you want to eat, we often recommend that people drink supplements like Booster and Ensure, so that they get a good density of calories and fat and proteins, so they don't become malnourished.
Sometimes it's easier to swallow, right?
That too.
My dad started hating Boost and Ensure. It was one of those things. And you know, if you have the ability to maybe make shakes, maybe that's something you can control, or put the Boost in a shake.
Right.
Right? Put some whatever you like, whatever fruits or flavors you can add to that. You know, because they make vanilla. That blends with other things.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can throw, you know, berries have a lot of antioxidant properties. So those are all things that you can try to do to make it more palatable.
Right. And so the next, I mean, for obviously not necessarily your area of specialty, but there's a lot of information too. And we're going to talk a little bit more in a moment, but this is where it's important for patients to kind of know, how to write the information down. It's good to go with somebody too.
Absolutely.
To have another set of ears, because a lot of this starts to feel like you're underwater. It starts to sound like the adults in Charlie Brown, because there's so much happening at once.
There's panic. Yeah. There's fear. It's hard to really think straight when you're fearful, and you're literally fearing for your life. So it's understandable that you're not going to absorb everything that's said the first time around. And so it is crucial that you have that support person is also, the person taking notes and remembering things for you.
Yeah, that's so vital, I think, is to write things down and to not necessarily spend too much time on Google.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I know. Yes. And, the quality of the information that you get on the internet is so variable. So you have to be careful to look at your source. The best source that you can look at is MedlinePlus.gov, G-O-V. This is the National Library of Medicine's consumer website. So anything that's on that has been vetted. It's accurate information. So that's the best place to go to look for medical information. Medline, all one word, MedlinePlus.gov, G-O-V.
I have never heard of that, and I'm very grateful to have that information right now. MedlinePlus.gov.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens when you get a diagnosis, or you find out maybe somebody else that you know has that, and then you're sort of overwhelmed with a lot of information that might not necessarily pertain to you. And this still is something that you have to, prepare yourself, arm yourself with information, but still ask the right questions to your provider.
Absolutely. And, the other thing you just have to be wary of is, a lot of websites that end in .com are businesses, and they're trying to sell you something or trying to sell advertising. A lot of times, testimonials that you'll see on the internet are from disgruntled people who have, an agenda, and they aren't necessarily representative of, what happens to most people. So you have to, have a large grain of salt when you're looking up information on the web that hasn't been vetted. And that's why I always send my patients to that website, because I know we can trust what it says.
That website, one more time, is MedlinePlus.gov. And I think every time you're on, I'm going to make sure that we let people know about that as well.
Amen.
Excellent. More in a moment. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Kathy Tynes. She is the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. You can follow her on Twitter at KTynes, T-Y-N-U-S. And you can also go to ISMS.org to find out more about the Illinois State Medical Society. We'll be right back after this on 720 WGN. It's the Patty Vasquez Show, and we're so happy you're here. It is Wellness Wednesday, and we are so honored to have in studio with us Dr. Kathy Tynes, who is the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. We were talking a little bit about before the break about Alex Trebek's announcement that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. We were also talking about some of the things that doctors wish patients knew, and I wanted to expand on that a little bit more, Doc. I know that you have patients that come in, and I don't even know how you process everything. I mean, you're always so quick to, on such a wide variety of topics here, and that must be something that you have to bring into the room with your patients as well. What do you wish they knew more, or what they knew?
Well, so one thing I've noticed a lot, I think more recently for some reason, is patients are afraid to try treating their symptoms. And we'll often, have a symptom, be worried about it, and then rather than try a home remedy, something over the counter, they come in to see me. And I think, that's all well and good, but it would be okay for you to try a couple of Advil or some Tums or Zantac. It would be okay to try that and see if your symptom goes away. Because if it goes away and it doesn't come back, then it probably wasn't something dangerous.
So patients who are kind of in for a wide range, like maybe a low-grade fever?
Yes, a low-grade fever, oftentimes can just be a mild viral illness, mm-hmm. and it'll pass. So I understand there's a concern that treating their symptoms will mask something that's more serious.
Okay.
And that's not the case. So, for instance, if you have appendicitis, 2 Advil aren't going to make it go away.
No, no,
okay?
No, I can vouch for that.
Okay.
No.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, it's not going to hurt to try it once, twice, and give it a little time.
Mm-hmm.
For most things. Obviously, if something's getting progressively worse, you don't sit on it, right?
Right.
Or if you take something and it comes back right away, you know, that probably is something you need to look at. So the other piece of this is where I see extremes. I see people who, you know, don't want to try anything on their own. They're fearful of that. And on the other extreme, people are, you know, maybe taking 10, 15 Advil in a day.
Oh.
And come in to see me, not because of that original pain they were treating. Oh, their arthritis flared up. Now they've got gastritis. And so they've lost their appetite and they're nauseous and they've got abdominal pain. And, you know, now they have to lay off the Advil because they've overdone it. So, you know, you can overdo the home remedy as well. So somewhere in the middle is ideal. So try something simple, see if it works. If it does, great, you're done. We don't need to worry about it. If it doesn't go away, don't keep retreating it and thinking that you're going to cure it that way.
And read the instructions.
Yeah.
Read the directions,
usually,
the warnings.
Tell you, yeah, don't take this for more than 10 days or 14 days without consulting your doctor. So,
or not more than a certain number in 24 hours.
That too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Don't overdose.
Well, and I know when the boys were young, you know, we would always, we would do our best first, right, with fevers and things like that. I don't know if you remember this, and I don't know if it's changed when it comes to kids. I know that pediatrics isn't necessarily your specialty, but there was the overlapping of when you do Tylenol and ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there was, Steve was very good about that, what's that tipping point of when, you know,
sure,
you should try both.
Every 4 hours. So, so no aspirin, period, for kids who have a fever,
okay.
Because that can cause Reye's syndrome. So that's a big no-no. But you, for adults, too, if you have a case of the flu, it, you know, you're miserable. So, you know, reducing your discomfort relies a lot on Tylenol and Advil, and you can alternate them. So every 4 hours you take one or the other so that you're not taking too much of either one.
Again, we are talking to Dr. Kathy Tynes, the president of the Illinois State Medical Society. She's assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern, and we are live, so we would love to hear from you if you have any questions or concerns. Obviously, she's extraordinary at answering your questions. 312-981-7200. That is the number to call or text us, 312-981-7200. Tom Hush, our executive producer tonight, has a question.
Yeah, I recently got into a small argument with my girlfriend today because I am a little bit doctor phobic. Even though I grew up in a household, my mom was a nurse and she continues working in the medical profession today, but I've always had a lot of anxieties about going to the doctor. And I feel like a lot of people my age share that anxiety, whether it's through the medical part of it or even insurance issues. So what kind of advice would you give to someone like me or people my age about getting to the doctor and doing things like a yearly checkup?
So I'm a big proponent of an annual physical. However, at certain stages of your life, it's more important than at others. So, you know, obviously small children are vulnerable to lots of infectious diseases and need to have their immunizations up to date. And people who are older, they run the risk of developing coronary disease and diabetes and high blood pressure. Young, healthy adults probably need to come in maybe every 3 to 5 years, as long as they're getting their blood pressure checked once a year. That doesn't require a doctor visit. You can do that at your local Walgreens. And if you have any special exposures or concerns related to, for instance, sexually transmitted infections, maybe that would be something you'd want to, you know, not delay. That would be something you'd maybe want to do some screening for if you're not living the most cautious lifestyle in that regard. But otherwise, you know, we don't typically start to see things like diabetes and heart disease and things like that until you hit middle age or older.
So it's one of those things when I'm 25 years old, I generally feel pretty healthy most of the time. It's kind of like if you don't notice anything wrong, mm-hmm. you're probably good to just.
You're probably
ride it
okay.
Out,
and again, as long as the thing that you won't be able to feel is your blood pressure.
Right.
And for people who maybe have a strong family history and again, don't live the healthiest of lifestyle, you might want to check a screening for diabetes. But that doesn't necessarily have to be done every year.
All right. Well, now I feel good.
Excellent. A listener asks from the 815, what about adding naproxen to the pain relief rotation? Naproxen.
So Advil and naproxen are in the same family. So mm-hmm. one or the other, but not both.
Okay.
So if you want to do naproxen instead, the only difference is that naproxen has a longer half-life. So it's an every 12-hour instead of every 8-hour. So the beautiful thing about the Tylenol and the Advil or the ibuprofen is that they're both every 8-hour medications.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to alternate them every 4 hours. So I don't know if I could do the math with the naproxen. So it's just easier.
Right. And you're more aware of it, too. Like you're also paying attention to how you're feeling, and which might help you with preventing over-medicating.
Right.
Yeah, there we go. And also, we want to remind you that the website that Dr. Tynes mentioned a little bit earlier is MedlinePlus.gov, where a lot of the information has been vetted by the medical professional.
It's the National Library of Medicine.
The National. Well, that seems awfully prestigious.
Yeah.
Seems like it's legit and stuff.
Yeah, I would hope so. Sounds like it.
Let's take a break here. We'll come back in just a little bit after these messages. We're hanging out with Dr. Kathy Tynes, who is the president of the Illinois State Medical Society. You can follow her on Twitter at Kate Tynes and go to isms.org for more information. Again, she's also assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. And when mics are on, she's my, we have a doctor patient relationship right here. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Oh, great. Now I want a shamrock shake. I don't know if that's the appropriate response. My dad always took me to McDonald's for St. Patrick's Day for my shamrock shake. We used to go to the St. Patrick's Day parade right down here at downtown Chicago, do they still do? Kathy O'Neill joins us from the Irish American Heritage Center. We are talking about St. Patrick's Festival at the incredible IAHC. It is the 34th annual St. Patrick's Festival. There's going to be music and obviously a lot of dance, great food, and most importantly, great company. That's what I always love about the festival. We are in studio in the Allstate Skyline Studios, joined by Dr. Kathy Tynes. More medical conversation when we come back a little bit later. And Kathy O'Neill, who is, remind me of the title, the
Public Relations Manager.
The Public Relations Manager. And Terry O'Connell. It's always weird when I see you in studio because we've known each other since we were kids. But you do a lot of the genealogy and the library at the Irish American Heritage Center. Last time you surprised me with some information about my family, which do people get a little bit wigged out when they find out more about like their family? I mean, I think there's the good part, and there's always like the wow, that's weird.
Yeah,
come on closer to your microphone.
Oh, they definitely do.
Yeah, and Kathy was telling me that you guys have an event coming up next week with the genealogy department there.
We do. We're having the Ulster Historical Foundation come in for a full day of lecturing. So it's going to be all about using the Irish records. And they always pull the coolest records that really make you giggle, and it shows you the Irish sense of humor.
Oh, well, there you go. And that's part of the festivities as well, Kathy.
It's we always say that we get about 10,000 people throughout the building at the Irish American Heritage Center in March.
Wow.
One of the fun things I wanted to talk to you about is this Friday night, we start with our Lenten fish fry, and that runs all the way through mid-April, where families can come in and have fish and chips and see some step dancing. But Guinness is coming in on Friday night, and they're going to take your picture, and then they're going to put it in the foam in your pint glass.
So you can drink yourself.
Talk about weird. Like, I don't.
That's great.
And Terry said she wants to get one, but she's not going to drink it. And
I'm going to give it away.
You're just going to walk up to a guy and go, do you want my drink?
Do you want me?
That's my favorite beer.
Will you drink me?
That's great so for good. People who have great taste in beer and are also narcissists.
And they said, Guinness said, well, if you don't like your own picture, if you have something on your phone, they won't do logos or anything like that. But they'll do your, like, here's Fido. You know?
Okay. That's a fun thing. Yeah.
It's different.
I'm curious how they do that. I mean, like foam printing instead of silk print.
And they're not going to tell us because it's Guinness, you know.
They're secrets. Tom, would you drink a pint of yourself? Wait, that sounded wrong. With your picture on it.
Be a little bit bitter.
A little bit. There you go. We're big fans of Guinness in our house as well. Guinness obviously has so many of the different logos throughout the years. You know, I went to the Guinness warehouse, the headquarters of Guinness in Dublin. I've never posted all those pictures. I took so many.
Did you do the tour?
Yeah. Did I do the tour? No, because I was with Declan. And Griffin did. So Declan and I, there's like this one area where they have all the water. You know, there's a lot of different parts of it. There's the history of it. There's here's how we make everything. But there's almost this huge waterfall by the stairs, and Declan was just in heaven because there were all these different lights. And yeah, it's wonderful.
I learned a really cool way that they take care of their retirees, that people Ooh. Who've worked there, everybody from holding the door to working in the warehouse, are bussed in every day for a full meal. Guys in their men and women in their 80s and 90s, they take care of their retirees.
Sweet. I want to go work at Guinness then.
Oh, for multiple reasons.
Yeah.
That's just one of them.
It's a cool destination. So even if you don't like Guinness, just the history of it, and they, you know, go all the way back to how it began and all their incredible campaigns. And it was wonderful. It's so festive.
And they kept all their archives of all the people who've worked there. Just in case you were interested.
Yeah. The Irish, is there, I don't know if we have a comparison, but as far as record keeping and wanting, you know, obviously we have all these immigration roles and, you know, when we talk about Ellis Island, people who come here obviously want to trace their family lines back. Is it particularly strong with the Irish community when it comes to keeping records?
Well, the Irish records are really hard because there was a fire. So we lost a lot. So it is very, very hard to do research and find stuff. You have to really be patient. Mm-hmm. For myself, it took 15 years.
Really?
For you, it took me 2 afternoons.
I don't know what that says about my family. I'm like, we're here.
They let their presence be known.
Yeah, we're a little bit loud. I know it's hard. I know it's hard to believe, but that's how we go. And will there be? You'll have the library open for the St. Patrick's Day festival as well.
We do on the 16th. We start after the parade downtown, so okay. We go from 1 to midnight. And we say it's a little bit different than just your beer bash because the museum, the library, and the art gallery are open. So it's a really great way to showcase the culture that we have going on all year. So if you can't make it next Monday to the conference, the workshop, you can bring whatever you have on Saturday, the 16th, and Terry will be there with her crew, just kind of trying to dig deeper for all levels, right?
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And the website, again, is it's irish-american.org.
Yes.
You can also call 773-282-7035 with extension 10. And children under 12 are free.
Yes, both days.
Nice.
So we do it all over again on March 17th. And that's actually a smaller party. But of course, we're going to have one. It is St. Patrick's Day. So that one is, we have Mass at 10:30, and then we open at noon, and we go till 11 at night. And that's just in the pub.
Okay.
But that's a really nice one, too, because it's a lot of families. We have some step dancing schools, some pipers, some music. So it's a two-day celebration.
And of course, as always, the the Shannon Rovers. We love the O'Hare School of Irish Dance. That's all on St. Patrick's Day. The Trinity Irish Dancers, are they there both days?
They're there both days, yeah.
As they would be, so they're there, yeah.
They make their home, both O'Hare and Trinity, both practice. All the schools that we have coming, music and dance, most of them train and practice and perform at the center. So that's a nice way to showcase, okay, especially parents come in and bring the really little kids.
Yeah.
Seeing them play, you know, tin whistle and baron and banjo, it's a really great way to say, you know, come out and watch this music and then bring the kids back for lessons.
It's wonderful. And I've shown videos of Declan. I do a lot of walking with autism videos at the Irish American Heritage Center. And I, you know, so Declan and I will go from room to room. He doesn't necessarily like to stay in one place for very long. Mm-hmm. As Terry will. We don't get to spend too much time talking because Declan loves the Statue of Liberty outside of the library. There's also like this shamrock that he loves. It's, I think, near one of the break area or the tea room, I think. But so we make our way through. We explore everything, the library, the auditorium, where, of course, is where the dancers will be. Also, Fifth Province. Tell us a little bit about Fifth Province.
So it's our beautiful pub that's been open since probably about 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a very beautiful hearth, so stone fireplace that was built by our men and women who volunteer at the Heritage Center. So it's your traditional Irish pub, except for it has TVs. But that's where a lot of the action takes place, and that's one of our main stages. So you'll see music and dance throughout the day, and it's just a really beautiful room and very much evocative of Ireland.
It's such a great celebration. We've been going for so many years. I mean, the kids have basically grown up there, and we have a blast. Again, we are talking to Kathy O'Neill. She's the public relations manager for the Irish American Heritage Center. It's the 34th annual St. Patrick's Festival, Saturday, March 16th, from 1 p.m. till midnight. And then again, there's a St. Patrick's Day celebration, smaller but no less grander, on Sunday the 17th from noon to 11. And again, the phone number is 773-282-7035. 5, extension 10. We're hanging out with Terry O'Connell, who will help you trace your family lines here in Chicago. We'll talk more about that and how you got involved when we come back. And Dr. Kathy Tyne is hanging out with us as well. More questions coming in on our text line as well. So we will get to everything, I promise. More on the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. Oh, 312-981-7200. I don't want to leave you guys out of it. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions. So much going on at the Irish American Heritage Center. Of course, we are celebrating St. Patrick's Day in just a little over a week, but there's so much more going on. This Friday night, they're going to have their Guinness demonstration. They're going to take your photo, put it on a pint of Guinness, like
put it inside
in the foam.
Of the foam, and your face will be looking back at you as you drink it. It's unusual.
Well, yeah, or else you swirl. I mean, like, everyone's going to have a different way of dealing with that, I think. And there's no extra, I mean, like, it's just your regular pint of Guinness charge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good to know, too.
Face is free.
Yeah. Faces for free.
Now with 20% more nose, I don't know.
No. That is Kathy O'Neill. She's the manager of public relations at the Irish American Heritage Center. Everybody go to irish-american.org or call 773-282-7035, extension 10. We also have in studio with us Terry O'Connell, who is the genealogist there that you can hang out with during the festival coming up on St. Patrick's Day, as well as their St. Patrick's Day celebration. But she also has an event coming up on Monday, March 11th. Researching your Irish and Scots Irish ancestry, and that's going to be at 5 p.m. and the oh wait
seven, 9 to 5
9 to 5 oh yes. I knew there was a 5 in there somewhere. I wrote down, all I wrote was 5 9 2 all day.
It's all day. Yes.
Yeah, you are. I have to ask, knowing you from grade school, and I don't think you and I have any recollection of how we did as far as grade. You and I, at least I remember more about like riding the free bus in Niles. We were just talking about that the other day with the director of public works, mm-hmm. Fred Braun, and I was telling him I loved that. It was like such freedom, wasn't it?
I didn't know anything about the free bus until I met you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never got you in any trouble, did I? Because that wasn't necessarily my forte. Was it? No. Now your parents know. I think my mom just found out the other day that I used to get on the Niles free bus would take you all. I mean, you'd be on like Bob's Road to drop him off in front of his house, and then you'd end up at Golf Mill Mall. It was the best.
Wait, so I used to sneak into New York City, and you guys were sneaking into Niles?
Oh, those Norwood Park girls. We were crazy, weren't we?
I think the worst was we went to like Lincolnwood for a movie, mm-hmm. and I had no clue where I was going, and it was all in your hands.
I got you back. All right.
You
didn't
totally
I?
Got me back.
Yeah. My mom was talking about this one day because Griffin has to take public transportation, and she and I were sweating it mm-hmm. because I don't know. You used to just go. And, you know, but we did. We would, you
we
know,
just went.
We just went. And there was no, my parents didn't seem overly concerned. But so how did you get involved in genealogy? What led you to this this role at the Irish American Heritage Center?
So two things. The big thing was that my maternal grandfather was in the hospital dying. And we didn't really know about his family.
Oh, no.
So I sat with little napkins asking my grandmother hundreds of questions and writing on these napkins. So that was like the start of it. But really what I wanted was to know more about my Irish. My Irish grandfather died when I was 4.
Okay.
You know, here we carry his name and we know nothing.
Yeah.
So that was my biggest want in it all. So it's all for these grandparents that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they were important parts of our lives. And,
sure.
And when they're gone and you have no clue really about what came before them, where were they from? What did they do? You know, you have to find the answer.
Well, and I love that your drive to find that answer led you to help other people find answers.
I love it. It's so much fun to sit and help people just find that one record they're looking for. We had one lady at a meeting who was interested in we found her dad's death record. And I think he died when she was a child. And she had never seen it before. And you just knew she was hooked.
Yeah.
The second she saw it.
Well, and I still haven't. I'll have to have you send my stuff because Steve, my husband is like, you know, well, don't share any of that online because you don't want people like to
right.
be able to trace that to you and all those. And mm-hmm. you were very kind with being private about it as well.
That was very hard to do.
I know, because you're like, and then this, and it was weird. Well, it was weird for me to find out when my dad passed away. I didn't know that we were South Side Irish. I'd grown up believing we were always North Side mm-hmm. Irish, that he had grown up at Lincoln, and like at Clark and DeVersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I to read his birth certificate, I was like, wait a minute. Which, by the way, was my inn, and this, no one's gonna like this, but it was my inn, odd accidentally, I felt like my dad told me, who passed, he passed away in 2001, when I went to go interview Speaker Madigan, it was like out of nowhere, we were talking about the Beverly Arts Center, and I said, as a matter of fact, I found out when my father passed away that he was Southside Irish. And Speaker Madigan turned to me, because my last name is Vasquez, he goes, "You're Irish?" and he, like, apparently for, like, the rest of the day after our interview, he was telling legislators that would come up to me and be like, "Speaker Madigan is so excited because you're Irish and Mexican, because he married a Mexican woman and their kids are Irish and Mexican." So, you know, for whatever it's worth, that was my, it sort of broke down that wall a little bit with,
that was
the,
your
with
in.
The speaker. Yeah, it was really strange. But that's what people find out. These are these little mysteries that you never knew about. And that's what I love so much about the Irish American Heritage Center. By the way, we have a text, Kathy, who is the public relations manager over there. 773 says, "Love going on First Friday all year long. The music is the best and the atmosphere is uplifting and fun."
Excellent.
From one of our listeners. So
wonderful. Thank
somebody saying that they how much love, and that if one person texts, that means that there's about another 1,000 people who are like, I, you know, they're just listening. That's my, I'm not sure if those numbers are accurate, but that's what I like to think. And if they're negative posts, I think it's just that one person.
Of course.
Tom, doesn't that math work out for you too?
Generally, yeah, that's what they tell me.
We have a whole chart back in a room
teach
somewhere.
You that in broadcasting school,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You don't have to amplify those, but the positive ones are always amplified. Again, the St. Patrick's Festival is Saturday, March 16th from 1 p.m. to midnight. Tell us a little bit about some of the, we talked about the dancing, obviously, in the auditorium. And what are some of the things that stand out for you?
Well, it's 86,000 square feet, and we do use every room. So it's music and dance and kids' activities, family fun on all four floors. So you might go into our auditorium and see 6 dance schools. We have our choir performing. Up on our third floor is a room where all of our schools are performing, so our music schools. 3 different schools are coming in where the kids are anywhere between 8 and 20 years old. We also have bagpipers. We have our we have about 12 vendors coming selling Irish gifts and crafts.
I have
and
so much
food
stuff.
And drink. I know. And every year I go out to the vendors with my purse and they've shut down. So I always miss buying stuff. So, but there's some really beautiful gifts. Our gift shop is open, and it's just a really nice, we have a whole kids area up on the fourth floor. So there's face painting and games for kids. So it's just a really nice, and lots of food and lots of drink.
It is, it's just the best time.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great food, and I love all of it. And I've mentioned this to you before about how, for the most part, I mean, look, teenage kids and older, like, you know, middle school kids will sometimes stare at Declan, and I get that, but like I would say almost everybody just is so welcoming, whether Declan's in his wheelchair or just exploring, and I think some people are starting to get to know him there too. They see us every year.
And you as well, because you've come out and done some
comedy,
and you've also emceed a few things and announce some of our bands and stuff. So
oh, yeah,
he's coming, Gaelic Storm. We're like, would you like to announce the band? Would
Gaelic Storm is one of our favorite bands, and that's another memory. We have so many memories of the great experiences that we've had at the Irish American Heritage Center. Just not just the St. Patrick's Festival, but also of course Irish Fest in the summer. Will you stay for another segment?
Yes,
so that
mm-hmm.
We can talk about memories and some of the things that have surprised
absolutely.
You over the years. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Kathy Tynes, you've got to come hang out with us. For the St. Patrick's Festival.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Hey, twist my arm.
Everybody should come hang out.
Guinness, it's, right?
Yes.
Okay.
With your face.
Say, I'm there.
There's
yes.
a doctor in the house.
There's a doctor
there
you
in
go.
The house.
Irish-American.org or call 773-282-7035. More in a moment. Oh, it's extension 10, by the way. 773-282-7035, extension 10. More with our guests when we come back on 720 WGN. It's a Patty Vasquez Show, and we're so happy you're here. We can just let that music play. I mean, are there any royalty issues with an Irish reel? Is that an Irish reel? I don't even know.
It's actually from Titanic.
So never mind.
But the reason I played it is because it is
Gaelic
Storm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were in the movie. They were in where all the Irish were hanging out. The second, was it like not even second or third or fourth class? It was just sort of in the hold, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. They're playing at House of Blues on the 15th.
Do you know if they're back by any chance for some Irish Fest?
I'm not sure yet. We haven't announced our lineup yet.
All right, no pressure.
And I couldn't tell you even if I knew.
Oh, I see. Well, we have to get through St. Patrick's Day before we start planning. I would at least start planning our adventures at Irish Fest. St. Patrick's Festival at the Irish American Heritage Center. Of course, Saturday, March 16th is the big festival from 1 p.m. to midnight. They've got everything going on all over this big, huge building that used to be Mayfair College and then became... Was it?
Yeah, it was one of the city colleges of Chicago, Mayfair Junior College. Before that, it was a grammar school. We bought it in 1985, 86,000 square feet. It looks like Hogwarts. I mean, it's so
it is
big.
So cool. Yeah,
it's beautiful. And the volunteers we have, the numbers of them who come in still every week to help us maintain the grounds, everything from, you know, changing a light bulb to painting a room, we're indebted to them forever.
And that is Kathy O'Neill, who is the public relations manager at the Irish American Heritage Center. Go to irish-american.org. You can also call 773-282-7035, extension 10. It's just $15 for all that fun, and then $12 for kids 3 to 14, children under, wait, 12 through...
So it's $12.
Oh, if you buy it now.
If you buy in advance, it's $12. And then it goes up the day before.
Oh, buy it now.
Yeah.
Save your $3 and buy another pint.
And then kids, 12 and under, for all of our big events are free.
And then for the celebration, it's $10. And kids under 12 are free, of course, as you just mentioned. And we also have Terry O'Connell, who's the genealogist over by there at the Irish American Heritage Center. She also has an event coming up on Monday, Researching Your Irish and Scots Irish Ancestors. It's from 9 to 5 in the library.
It's actually in the Aaron Room.
In the Aaron. Now, which one's the Aaron Room?
Our big ballroom on the fourth floor.
I love the Aaron Room.
But we're expecting 200 people. So we had to kind of move it to the biggest room.
Bring your patience.
And it's free. Yeah.
Yes, bring your patience. And we also, tomorrow, we are going to feature an author who has an incredible book out. Tell us a little bit about this event.
Sure. Patrick Radden Keefe is a writer for The New Yorker. And I believe that you're talking with him.
I'll be talking with him tomorrow. We have an interview with him tomorrow, as does, I believe, probably John Williams. He'll be on WGN Morning News.
Yes. So he's joining us in our library tomorrow at 7 p.m. for a talk about his book, Say Nothing. And that was about a case in the 70s with a mother of 10, Brenda McConville, who was taken in the night. And, you know, speculation as to who did it. But it was very, you know, while he was delving into the story, looking into the case, he solved it. So I don't want to give anything away, but
right.
It's just kind of... gives you a glimpse into what was going on in the 70s in Northern Ireland, and the repercussions of taking this woman, and a lot of people knowing who did it, but they were too afraid to talk. So it's going to be really great. It's getting some great reviews, and we have really great authors who come in probably 3 or 4 times a year to our library for talks and lectures and selling their books. So it's a beautiful library, and everything's free when you come in there.
Yeah, I love that. And now, Terry, as a genealogist there, has there been a moment, I think I asked you this last time, that has just really surprised you? Like, do you have any favorite moments of working with somebody where they just had, like, this incredible breakthrough?
I just think it's everyone that has that.
Yeah.
That breakthrough. You get excited to see that connection, you know. People come in and they've been searching for years and they can't find it, and you're, you know, 5-10 minutes going through websites and you're like, oh, here it is. And, you know, they're bewildered that you found it that quick. I had one gentleman I talked to on the phone. He was up in Lake County, and he knew about his great-grandfather, but he didn't know where the great-grandfather's mother was from. He thought that she was from Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And just while I was talking, like a 3-minute conversation, I was like, well, she really wasn't from Ireland. She was from Canada, but this is where her parents were from in Ireland. And he was like, wait, you just did that in 3 minutes?
That's wild.
Well, it's knowing where to look, you know?
Sure.
So.
And I know, Tom, have you traced your family back?
We did do a little bit of that. I'm lucky enough where on my mother's side, that's the Irish side, my grandmother was the one who came across. So we've got a very direct, relation to that. But once we did trace our genealogy on my father's side, and he's off the boat Scottish. And, he was raised Scottish, as far back as he could trace until he went to a genealogist, and he found out that my last name, Hush, is actually Welsh.
What?
And, no offense to the Welsh, but he was mortified.
Oh, no.
He was like, I can't be Welsh.
You know, it's interesting because when I was on stage one time, my husband has a very common Welsh name, but I didn't realize that until I said it on stage, which I won't say here. But the entire audience, it was a bunch of Englishmen from Weber Grill. They were in town for a big festivity. And I said I was getting married, and I said his last name, and the whole, because I thought he was Irish, just mostly Irish. And then I said his last name. They're like, oh, he's Welsh. The exact same. Like, what is the attitude? What's the attitude against the Welsh?
They're the Welsh, you know. They're just kind of there.
Oh boy. All of our Welsh listeners now, see, this is a big demographic for the show because my husband and my kids are all Welsh. But I went to Wales last year and it was incredible. The people, the food.
Oh, it's a beautiful country.
The signs I couldn't read. It was like, wow, that is a lot of consonants.
A lot of Y's.
A lot of Y's. Yeah, next to N's. I don't understand. We are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Dr. Tynes, do folks come to you and say, hey, I trace my family back and does this mean anything? I don't know how much this is playing into patients coming into the doctor's office and something they've learned.
Well, certainly, some diseases are more prominent based mm-hmm. on what part of the globe you're from.
Yeah.
So, for instance, people with celiac disease are typically of Northern European descent. So if you're Irish, you're more likely to have celiac disease than if you're Italian.
Well, there you go.
There's a blood disorder, too. I can't think of what it's called. This is like Irish only.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I don't know. I think it's maybe called Kelly blood or something.
Story never endeth. My dad always had the best story, but he would repeat them, and it always had some new flair to it. It always had something different. Jasmine, what are you doing for St. Patrick's Day?
I'm going to be going on the Spirit of Chicago for a lunch cruise for the first time.
Yay! That sounds wonderful. I know how much you love boating.
I've wanted to go on that ship for years. I've been to Navy Pier a lot.
Yeah.
And seen those giant dinner ships and always wanted to go. And, with me being independent now, I asked a bunch of my friends if they wanted to go with me. And it's going to be a bunch of blind and visually impaired people on a ship.
Yes.
So we're going to party.
Yes, you are. That's the best way to do it, too. And I hope please let it be warm. I'm not interested in anybody else's day except for Jasmine's. What, Jasmine?
And just wanted to say something real quick. For those of you guys that are hating on Wales, I hear. I don't know if you know about sailing, but the Volvo Ocean Race, which is a big sailing race that goes all around the globe, ended in Wales, London last summer.
Oh, there
so
you go.
A bunch of boats sailed into Wales, and one was named, the best sailor.
Oh, there you go. There, thank you, Jasmine, for educating us. And it's always wonderful to hear from you. I know it's been a while since I've been able to message you back. I know I love when you messaged me about what you might be focusing on as far as studies and maybe going into politics a little bit. So you've got to.
I'll be finishing this program next month, April 3rd,
and then I'll
be ready to face the big sighted world.
That's right. Well, I think that you're already ready, but I think you'll be more equipped and armed.
Have you ever been on any of the lunch ships, if you don't mind me asking?
I've been on the Odyssey. That's one of the sort of like dining ships that I've been on. I've actually performed on the Odyssey, and it was a nightmare because nobody wants to hear this disembodied voice coming from some deck on the boat. They're just trying to eat their buffet, and here's like someone talking about growing up Irish and Mexican. They didn't care.
And they don't get to see your pretty face.
Is the river being dyed on that Saturday or Sunday? Because I'm not sure, and I want to go see that, too.
Yes, it gets dyed on Saturday morning by the Chicago Plumbers Union. And it is
a
food-based
dye.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. The fish will love it.
Yes, and I remember going to a party after the Cubs won the World Series, and it was the same union who dyed the river bluer. And they said it's actually easier to do it green and this of year because it holds the color. So,
well, by the way, I believe, and I could be mistaken, the national color of Ireland is actually blue.
Blue.
Yes. So I always, I like to be funny and wear blue on set, but nobody gets it.
Too obscure.
Jasmine, great to hear from you. Thank you so much. We'll call again on Friday night, too, because we'll, of course, have our Finally Friday panel if you're up.
All right. I'll try to remember.
Wonderful. Bye, Jasmine. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
I want to thank our guests from the Irish American Heritage Center. Thank you so much, you guys, for coming in so late at night on a Wednesday, on a school night of all things. We've been hanging out with Kathy O'Neill, who is the public relations manager at the Irish American Heritage Center. We're celebrating the 34th annual St. Patrick's Festival over by Ayr. It's right at the top of the ramp when you get off Wilson, off the Edens. So it's easy to get to. You've got public transportation at Jefferson Park. I sometimes Uber there. They've got parking sometimes.
Yeah, we also have a shuttle that that both days. So if you drive toward the center and it seems pretty full, we'll have people outside telling you to sending you about a block or two away, and the shuttle runs the whole fest and it's free.
Yes. And you can also find out more about all the festivities, all the musicians and dancers and food, stuff for the kids, of course, as always, the Wiggle Worms. They've got everything, all the information at irish-american.org, or you can call 773-282-7035, extension 10. And Terry's got her event coming up on Monday, March 11th from 9 to 5, researching your Irish and Scots Irish ancestors. And what kind of information should they bring with them, by the way, before I forget?
Really, for this, it's just more learning. So bring a pen and paper and be ready to take notes to learn about these records and where you can find them.
Excellent. So, and if you want to know more about all the other events, Your Face on a Beer, Say Nothing book with the event tomorrow night, that's also available on the website, irish-american.org. Thank you both so much for coming in tonight. And I'll see you very soon. Sooner rather than later, both of you, please. All
right. Thank you.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. Really loved hanging out with our friends from the Irish American Heritage Center. Hope to see all of you out at the festivities on the 16th and 17th and all the great functions they have going on. Before that, Your Face on a Beer and the conversations with the author of Say Nothing tomorrow night. We were talking earlier with Dr. Kathy Tynes about some medical concerns and some things that she'd like you to know about. It is Wellness Wednesday on the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. Our number is 312-981-7200. If you have any questions or comments that you want to jump in with, we'd love to hear from you. Dr. Tynes is the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. You can follow her on Twitter at @ktynes or go to isms.org to find out more about what the Illinois State Medical Society does. And one of the great things that you've taught us about too is medlineplus.gov. I want to ask you again, we were talking about things your doctor wishes you knew, and there were a couple of things that you wanted to make sure we mentioned as well.
Yeah, so one thing that's so extremely helpful, especially for the elderly listeners out there who have a lot of medications, bring in your pill bottles. So a lot of times the lists are not kept up to date. A lot of times what's on a list isn't really what you're taking. There's really no substitute for just grab all your pill bottles, throw them in a plastic bag, and just bring them into the visit with you. And then I can see exactly, when it was prescribed, who prescribed it, what the dosage is, when you had it filled last, so I can get an idea of whether or not you're actually taking it. There's just a wealth of information, and it doesn't require any effort on your part other than scooping them up and putting them in a bag.
Well, and I get, I remember when my dad was diagnosed with, he had small cell lung cancer and also was diagnosed with an aortic aneurysm that was growing. And you lose track of like who's prescribing. And at the time it was 2001. And you want to make sure that you don't have things that perhaps are dangerous to take together, right?
Right, absolutely. And sometimes care is so fragmented.
Right.
So I have patients who go to two or three different institutions and have three or four specialists, and it's hard to keep track of all those things. And I'm the primary care doctor, so I'm not just looking at one organ system and what are you taking for your heart. I gotta look at everything, and I gotta know that what you're taking is working, that it's not dangerous for you, that it's not interacting with another medical condition that you have. So all of that's so important, and it's really hard to do if I don't have accurate information. And sometimes we do end up acting like sleuths and calling around to the pharmacies and getting that information over the phone, but it's just so much easier to have it right in front of me.
And that's key, is the more information you have, the better you can help each other. One of the things that I wonder about is how doctors, take care of themselves, too. I know we have a lot of other things to talk about, but there is, this growing concern when it comes to, job satisfaction, even.
Sure.
Because of all the different pressures that I put on doctors, not just in the room, but the bureaucracy, the administration, mm-hmm. a lot of legal issues that you have to take into consideration. How do you manage it, and how do you recommend other doctors take care of themselves?
Well, first of all, just to give you an idea of the scope of the problem, we lose 400 doctors a year to suicide. So that's an entire medical school class. Think about that. So physician burnout is something that's gained more attention recently. And it's all those things that you described. Medicine keeps growing, and knowledge keeps advancing at a rapid pace. So keeping up can be stressful. There's a lot of, you know, competing demands for your time and your attention. What we prefer and what the way we prefer to spend our time is in an exam room, sitting, talking, examining our patients. Mm-hmm. But what we end up spending more time doing is administrative work. So we end up in an electronic medical record, typing our notes, putting in orders, you know, clicking on buttons and making sure our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted. Overcoming hurdles that are put up in front of us from insurers to get your tests or to get your medications. All of that takes time away from our actual patient care, which is what we love to do. So the more of those hassles, the more of those hurdles that we have, the less job satisfaction we have. And the more time we spend away from our family, the more time it takes us to do the same amount of work. So it's, you know, unfortunately, it's a problem that's been exploding in recent years with the advent of electronic medical records and other things. And it's frustrating. You know, it's frustrating because we can't get the care for the patients that we want to give them. And it's so your question was more, what is the problem or what is the solution rather than what is the problem?
And I know there's not one solution because every doctor obviously comes to their profession with a different set of their own expectations and their own personality, you know, and of course, you know, finding that job satisfaction, there's no one prescription and there's no one, how do you take care of yourself?
Sure.
So, I think it is important to keep in mind, we're going to take a break here and we're going to talk to Dr. Kathy Tynes throughout the show till 1 a.m. when Nick D takes the station. But we've got Adam Salzer coming in. Our conversation will continue, and I'll give you a few moments because I know that was a lot to ask about,
how
do doctors take care of themselves? And I also don't want to get too personal, but I think that's a startling number. We lose 400 doctors a year to suicide, and there's something that, you know, there's a conversation that needs to happen. So more when we come back in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago. That's how you get Capone.
It's one of my favorites. Man, you know what? That's a remote dropper for me. I know Nick D has asked this question before, but mine would be The Untouchables is one of mine. I do. I love, love, love this movie. We are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios after Kathy Tynes, the president of the Illinois State Medical Society and assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern, joins us. And now we welcome to the studio, as it says on, by the way, when you just Google Adam Salzer, it says American author.
Oh, yeah.
American author.
American author. That's how I try to dress, you know, with the elbow patches and the corduroy jackets.
That, I believe that's the first picture that comes up, as a matter of fact.
Quite
like, yes.
Yeah.
And I do like the shades. I mean, the glasses, the white frames.
The new frames,
those are great.
They make me feel a little bit extra every day.
Yeah, it looks great. And Adam is a historian, an author, a tour guide, and he's got a new tour that you need to know about. It's Effing Chicago.
Effing Chicago. This is the Effing Chicago Gangster Tour. Effing Chicago is a group of us tour guides where we're doing these tours where it's part of the advertisement. We might swear a bit. We might wear a hoodie. We might say something snarky if we go by the big silver building with the guy's name on it, whose name we will not mention. So if you have a problem with that kind of thing, we're not a safe space for people like you. So, and when we're talking about gangsters especially, you know, there's a lot of swear words that come to mind when I want to describe what kind of a guy Al Capone really was. But this is all based on real research. It's a walking tour through the loop. It's a lot of gangster stories, really, that I don't think you're going to hear on a lot of the other gangster tours in town.
There's
a lot of them, but I don't think it's the same places. I can show you where Al Capone bought his underwear, though.
You can?
Yeah. Yeah, there's only a few buildings around the loop that I can trace Al Capone to that are actually still standing. There's a lot of urban legends about, like, him being up in the dome of the jeweler's building, which has no basis in fact. But I do know where he bought his underwear. It came out during his trial, and it's still standing.
What?
Wow. Okay. I was wondering, how would you know that?
During his trial, they had to establish that he had an income for evading his taxes, and they brought in the tailors who made his custom underwear for him. He favored union suits that were made out of ladies' glove silk, and it cost him, like, some phenomenal, it was like $20 a pair in 1920s money.
Which is, like, so, what, $1,000? Like, what, $500?
$350, $400 today, maybe up to $600.
Wow.
Really nice underwear we're talking about.
Yeah, there goes my concept of Al Capone. You think of him as kind of this rough, you know, tough, strong guy.
He liked his nice underwear made out of ladies' glove silk, which the jury thought was hilarious.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure he loved hearing that in court. Oh, boy. No gangster wants to have their silk, you know, or their ladies' glove underwear discussed in a courtroom. Yikes.
I mean, that wasn't the only dirty laundry that was
being aired. Well played.
Well done. Tom Hush just coming in with the laser precision right there. Well done. Now, I have to say that it's so funny. So many of the guests that come in studio, so many of the friends of the show, get a chance to go on Adam's tours. It's hard for us with my family, but I am so jealous. You've got to go on Adam's tours.
It's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, this one is going to be Saturday afternoon. If you go to mysterioushicago.com, we'll link you to it, or also effingchicago, effingchicago.com.
And you can follow Adam on Twitter, by the way, at Adam Selzer.
Yep.
And sometimes we commiserate about things on Twitter back and forth.
Yep, now and then we do.
So how long of a walking tour is this then?
This is going to be about 75 minutes. And it's a new one, so it's kind of hard for me to gauge.
Sure.
I mean, I've done this enough times that I have a general idea how long a tour is going to take based on just putting it together. But it's going to be about roughly 75 minutes or so. That's the average that I shoot for on a walking tour. And it's going to warm up on Saturday, too. So we might as well come on out.
Yes, please do. Where does the walking tour start?
It starts outside of the Cultural Center across from Millennium Park.
Okay.
There's quite a lot of stories around there. Like on Michigan Avenue, there's an old story that Vinny the Schemer Drucci once dressed up like a priest, that was his favorite thing to do, and beat up Dino Banyan, who was the head of the Northside Mob at the time.
What?
And the trick was, like, everybody said, man, don't mess with this. He had O'Banion beat him up, so everybody say, man, don't mess with this O'Banion guy. I saw him beat up a priest on Michigan Avenue.
Sure.
Later, Vinny the Schemer Drucci, when they were raising up the Michigan Avenue Bridge, jumped over the gap in his car in one of our best car chases.
Yeah, no kidding. Before the Blues Brothers did it, apparently.
Yeah, long before the Blues Brothers did it.
Inspiration, yes. Yeah,
they called him the Schemer for a reason. This was a guy who would like come up with ideas that, hey, we should run for mayor, or let's go to London and steal the crown jewels.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because it's that easy.
It's a whim. He's going on a whim. Man. Now, Adam, you put so much time into the research, and it seems like it's nonstop, whether it's doing work with the cemeteries and the tours there, and now you've got the effing Chicago, the gangster tour for everybody. You know, how much prep goes into this? Are you working with other tours?
Quite a lot. You know, some of it all overlaps. Like, I'll find stuff while researching other things. I was researching the cemetery book when I found the thing that's in the newspaper tomorrow about, it's one of Chicago's big unsolved mysteries. Is that, if you follow Chicago history at all, you're familiar with Daniel Burnham's famous maxim, make no little plans, they have no magic to stir men's blood, and probably will themselves not be realized. It's always been apocryphal. I mean, even Burnham's son said he didn't think he ever actually said that. It sounded like the kind of thing he would say, but he didn't think he ever actually said it in those exact words. But while doing other research, I found a 1910 article where he said that. So it turns out he actually did. It was it's one of those rare things where I actually get to confirm an urban legend instead of debunking something.
Vindicated, yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be in the Tribune tomorrow.
Hey, Roger, I'm sorry, and it's so bad. I'm so bad, like, on some nights when I look up and I don't know if the newsroom, you know, I know that there's a lot of work going on, and especially this R. Kelly, you know, the reports that Vic Vaughn and, of course, executive producer Ro Coleman have put together. So I just want to, first of all, say hi. We haven't had a chance to say hi on the air. And have you had a chance to ever go on any of the tours? Not maybe one of Adam's, but any of the tours around Chicago, like the cemeteries or the gangland ones?
No, I haven't, but I kind of lived the gangland life.
What?
When I lived in Vegas.
Oh.
The majority of the movie Casino took place when we lived out there. I reported on all that. So that was we got there in early 76 and we left September ish of 79, so we were out there for a good portion of it. I worked for news and a number of radio stations covered gangland trials. There was a report one day. We got a report out in the middle of the desert. They found a naked female body under a boulder.
Oh.
And so Yeah, Adam would have had a blast out there.
I don't do that new stuff. nothing from
that's
like,
too
I think
recent.
I stretch a little into 1960, but not the 60s, just 60 itself.
Oh, okay.
So that's about as recent as I get on these kind of things.
I got, yeah,
and even
was,
then, it's mostly up to 1929 or 30.
Right.
Now, it was very interesting. My car tires were slashed one day when I came out of the Las Vegas City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really, it was the mob, but they were more evident in the town North Las Vegas at that time. There was a lot going on there, both privately and in the government.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a fun time to be in Vegas back then. But I love the gangland stuff.
Well, it is wild. I mean, because we still have that reputation, Adam, don't we? Worldwide of being
everywhere you go, it's like, oh, you're from Chicago, Al Capone, bang bang.
Wow, I mean,
oh yeah, I've heard that multiple times.
When I was working at City Hall, that was they knew that was the impression overseas, mm-hmm. and they have struggled over the decades since Jane and Harold were mayors. Of trying to change that, they started to put together sales teams that would be that would have offices overseas to try to change that entire image of Chicago being a gangland city.
Yeah. And that's a hard image to shake too. When mythology becomes bigger than obviously reality,
a lot of what I do.
Yeah,
I'm never gonna convince people that H.H. Holmes didn't really own a hotel.
Oh, boy.
The evidence is pretty abundant that he never actually had a hotel that was up and running and open for business. But I'll never what people know is the Murder Castle.
Did I read that they're doing a limited series about H.H. Holmes?
It's going to be a Hulu series now.
A Hulu series.
It was going to be a feature film. Now it's going to be a Hulu series. My publisher's a little ticked off about
this. Yeah, I would imagine that they're... Because Adam has written the book.
Yeah, H.H. Holmes, The True History of the White City Devil, which tried to separate fact from fiction and find out what really happened to the extent that we can.
And they haven't... nobody's
called. Nobody from Scorsese's office has called me.
Yikes. Oh, man. That's not right. We are talking to Adam Selzer, American author. Historian.
Why am I saying that in an accent like that?
I don't know.
Am I doing bad British or mid-Atlantic here? I'm not even sure.
It's an excellent question.
I think you're doing pretentious.
Oh, yes, pretentious.
Well, if you watch any movie from like the 1930s and 40s, like they all had that that accent.
Yeah, that mid-Atlantic private school accent.
Exactly.
You're missing the pipe.
Yeah.
No,
you do not. Do you have a pipe?
Come on.
He does.
It completes the picture.
The image is complete in the Allstate Skyline Studios, where we're hanging out with Adam Selzer.
All of those accessories.
That's outstanding. And his new tour, Effing Chicago, you can find...
MysteriousChicago.com or EffingChicago.com, EffingChicago.com. Saturday, 4 o'clock. It's only $20. Come on out.
Yes, you have to come out.
You better be dead or in prison. And if you're in prison, break out.
And you'll be added to the tour.
Yeah, just like terrible Tommy O'Connor or Earl Deere or Sam Cardinella tried to. But...
These are great names.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Dr. Kathy Tynes, neither you nor I have cool nicknames.
No.
Dr. Kathy Tynes, but she's cool because she's the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. You can follow her on Twitter at @KTynes, and you can visit ISMS.org to find out more about the Illinois State Medical Society. Our conversation continues, and don't forget, our number is 312-981-7200 to join our conversation anytime. You can also follow me, Patty V Show, that's PATTIV Show, on Facebook, and follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Reading a text from a listener, the 815. Good evening, Patty. I couldn't text during your segment with the folks from the Irish American Heritage Center, but I loved it. My mom and dad are from Ireland, and I have a sister that left here and went back to Ireland and is living there with her husband and 4 children. We travel back often. My name is Will. Hi, Will. And thank you so much for texting the show. He says he never really celebrates too much of St. Patrick's Day because it's not really something that they do, but a good tie-in to the gangster guest and the doctor that is on the show. So thank you so much. By the way, Doc, the listener asks, what is the best remedy for drinking too much on St. Patrick's Day? Love you too, Will.
Hydrate.
Yeah.
A couple of Tylenol, big glass of water, and just keep chugging it. Maybe something with a little bit of electrolytes, like some broth.
Mm-hmm. What's your read on McDonald's breakfast?
a lot of sodium.
Yeah, the sodium helps, and that the grease somehow settles your stomach. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't think there's any medical explanation for that.
I'm a big fan of the mashed potatoes situation. Mm. That always makes me feel a little better if I've imbibed a little too much.
I like ramen.
Ramen.
That's my go-to.
I would think that would expand on impact. That seems like, I don't know.
I like savory and salty, and you know. Yeah, and then I put a big slug of sriracha sauce.
We don't really have Waffle House here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like below the Mason-Dixon line, you've got a Waffle House on about every third corner. It's perfect hangover chow.
If I may recommend, the Golden Nuggets in the Chicagoland area as the place to go. Yeah, I love the Golden Nugget. Their potato pancake, their triple play. I got the triple play with a couple of eggs. Yeah, well, your three eggs. Mm. Got your potato pancakes and your sausage. I get the turkey sausage just to make myself feel healthier, doctor.
Sure. I'm sure that really negates all the other problems with that meal.
I had the weirdest meal the other night. I went out with a couple of friends, Paul and Todd. We were at a 24-hour place. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a lot of breakfast foods, and they looked at me so sideways when I ordered the smoked salmon. They're like, you don't want to order that from this joint. And the waitress was like, no, ours is actually quite good. It was phenomenal.
Really?
Oh, it was so good.
Oh, wow.
Tomatoes and salmon, some capers and
that's
onions.
Tasty.
Oh, I know it doesn't seem like late night breakfast food.
No, yeah.
But okay, before we move on and go back to talking about effing Chicago, the new tour that Adam Seltzer, historian and author and a tour guide, is offering, you can go to effingchicago.com.
Yep, EFFING.
Excellent. And it is not, if you're faint of heart when it comes to language.
Yeah, you know, it's not like I'm going to be Limp Bizkit and just dropping the F bomb every chance I get just for shock value or anything. I'll just kind of talk like normal people talk and say exactly what kind of guy Al Capone was.
It'll be like Goodfellas. I mean, you know, the tour is fine.
Sure. Yeah. If your mileage may vary.
Yes.
But it's, more PG-13 language or R-rated, not NC-17 or anything.
Excellent.
Nothing that I think is problematic personally.
And it is a walking tour. What a great way to learn about Chicago and some of its history, but also enjoy.
We're even going to go into the tunnels a little bit.
Hello.
Well, the Pedway. But still, what's a gangster tour without some tunnels?
Yeah, you gotta have some tunnels and some Geraldo Rivera, whatever his name is. But Dr. Kathy Dynas is the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. You can follow her on Twitter at @ktynas and visit isms.org to find out about the work that they do. You mentioned something that I have to come back to. So where's your favorite place to go for ramen noodles?
Home.
Really?
You know what?
Joint?
So when I was in college, I was able to get out of my contract in the dorms, so I didn't have to eat dorm food.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a hot pot and a microwave, and I lived off of ramen and tuna. And so I just became like a ramen connoisseur, and I can buy a package for 25 cents. Why would I spend more money than that?
Because you have not tried some of the ramen joints.
I know, I should.
So
I know. Isn't that crazy?
I just learned how to do, you can do like the soft boiled eggs, like, and soak them in soy. You can find online like different ways to do that to drop it in your the ramen.
That sounds fancy.
And now I'm so hungry.
Yeah.
I am stupid with hungry right now.
Oh, no.
I've made the mistake of going down that path.
Oopsies.
All right. So it's good to know that the doctor eats ramen, because I'm always like, this is okay for me to eat once in a while.
Not every day.
Everything in moderation.
Although if you're in college, that's all you could afford.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I would drain almost all of the water out of the ramen before adding the flavor packets. So it was basically just beef flavored noodles that I'd put on top of mashed potatoes.
Oh.
It's like so much starch.
Carb surprise.
Yeah.
Yay.
Some carbo loading.
Well, I think that's actually a good idea if you're going to be going on the 75-minute walking tour.
Yeah, wear comfortable shoes, carbo load, dress appropriately, bring your camera, etc.
And how often will the tours be going, starting and starting when?
Well, this one, I've only got the one book so far.
Okay.
Effing Chicago's got a few others coming. Mandy, one of her other guys, is going to be doing some architecture tours and some women's history in Chicago tours, all with the Effing Chicago voice and slant. And then for myself, Grave Robbing 101 starts up again next weekend, and then I'll be doing the Grave Robbing Tour in New York in April a couple of times. And March 24th. 4th, I have a couple of Rose Hill Cemetery tours.
Yay!
So that's coming back, too.
I love hearing about the cemetery tours. We are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios. And the website for the Effing Chicago tours is effingchicago.com. Yeah. E-F-F.
E-F-F-I-N-G Chicago. I got to come up with a jingle for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
E-F-F-I-N-G Chicago.
Okay.
There you go.
All right, many talents.
Not bad.
Many talents.
Not bad at all.
Not bad.
All right.
And is it the same website for your other tours coming up at the Rose Hill Cemeteries?
I'll try to keep everything on all of the pages that I have. In the sidebar, there's upcoming tours by date and lists, all of them. Most of them you'll find through MysteriousChicago.com.
Excellent. I feel like we should give out all of our websites. Mine's WithKindWords.com, by the way. Building Patty V Show. Did I ever tell you I lost PattyVasquez.com?
Where'd
you last see it?
I know, on my computer. And there was something like that. The folks that had the website, I was renting it from or whatever, was kept paying every year. The company went under and it was bought up by somebody else, and I was never sent emails. So, and I checked. I like Googled, I went through all my emails. I have like 100,000 emails that I keep. I'm a hoarder. But withkindwords.com, and that's something we were talking about earlier with the medical professionals. I do some consulting with doctors, and I want to talk a little bit more medicine when we come back after the news, but I want to talk a little bit about, you know, there's a lot of colds and flus and people not quite sure if they have a sinus infection. And Adam, how have you done this season when it comes to all those ailments?
Well, I have a chronic sinus infection, so I always have a sinus infection. And I've also just realized recently a lot of what I thought was asthma is also probably some acid reflux that's causing this tightness in my throat.
Yikes.
I tried Tums for the first time and felt like a new man.
See, and this is exactly what the doctor was talking about, was trying some of the over-the-counter solutions to things that, I'm so glad that gave you some relief.
Yeah, it helped a lot, because it just manifested this weird tightness in my throat.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a burn, so I wasn't thinking heartburn. It was just this tightness. But I on a whim, I looked up some symptoms because the inhaler wasn't helping. So
sure.
Saw that acid reflux had caused that, bought a thing of Tums, took eight of them, like, wow. Instant.
That's great.
Tums did not pay me to say that, by the way, but they still could.
There's always time to get it.
If there's anybody out there from Tums listening, pay up.
And Doc, before we go to the break and run to news and then come back and continue our conversation, for the walking tour, you know, let people know why it's so important to figure out the right way to if you're going to be moving around outside, but it's also going to be cold. It's important to
It's going to be 40, high 40s. Yeah.
Oh,
it's going to be cold.
That's balmy. What are you talking about?
Yeah, never mind. Yeah.
Never mind.
It's great weather. You should definitely be coming out for the tour.
Dress in layers so you can peel some off.
Yes.
Because, you know, the thing is, when you leave your house or, you know, first thing in the morning, it's probably going to be a good 10, 15, maybe 20 degrees colder. So you need to be able to adjust your clothing to your needs. And if it's sunny, it might feel a lot warmer, too. You might want to take some more layers off.
Layer up, everybody. Let's take a break here. Then we're going to go to the news, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, where Roger Badish is waiting with the stories that matter more after this. We have covered a lot of ground tonight, and you know what? It's always great to start a show off with a Wildcats win, so we're thrilled to have a fun night here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and in studio we have American author. I have to say it every time that way, Adam Selzer, historian, tour guy.
American author.
See, you need all kinds of jingles tonight. Yeah. His new tour, Effing Chicago, is something you definitely want to check out, a walking tour of some of the great downtown.
The Effing Chicago Gangster Tour, Saturday afternoon at 4. Or EFFINGChicago.com.
Yay! We also have in studio with us the president of the Illinois State Medical Society and assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern, Dr. Kathy Tynes. Follow her at ktynes and also visit ISMS.org. And the other website we want to make sure that people remember is MedlinePlus.gov. There's information that has, you know, you guys have done the research. It's the medical library.
It's the National Library of Medicine's consumer website, and it contains medical information that's geared towards patients, so it's not in all the lingo, and it's been vetted, and it's accurate, and you can trust it. So MedlinePlus.gov.
Excellent. And we had, before I get to some of the topics I know we were going to cover about colds, flus, strep throat, and sinus infections, there's a listener who had a question because we were talking about how to manage a hangover. I've been told from the 847, I've been told that alcohol and Tylenol taken together can be fatal.
Well, you don't want to do too much.
Okay.
So certainly,
of either.
Right, of either. So when you drink a lot, it depletes some of your glutathione, and the breakdown product of Tylenol also depletes your glutathione. You need glutathione for healthy liver cells. So taken together, I would say I wouldn't down a bottle of Tylenol with a fifth of vodka,
mm-hmm.
but I think two Tylenol after some moderate drinking the night before is probably fine.
So the next day. So if you're not feeling great,
yeah.
your head's pounding.
Yeah, the next day is
alleviate
fine.
That. And sure. then is that the, I mean, because some people wonder ibuprofen is Aleve or.
I think it's personal preference.
Okay.
Whatever you feel works better for you for your pain.
Okay, because that's one of the things that people should be aware of and have the information, as always, better
Absolutely.
To be informed.
And I think that certainly there have been cases with people who maybe are chronic drinkers and imbibing too much Tylenol on top of it. So a safe dose within a day is 3,000 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're taking three doses of 2 extra strength Tylenol within a day, you're safe. So, but, again, in combination with alcohol, you might want to just take one and call it a day.
Oh, that is good to know. We also wanted to talk a little bit about...
one.
No, one tablet. one dose.
Tablet.
What is this, breakfast?
It's like a Tic Tac.
I do 3 or 4 ibuprofen every morning to stop the inevitable sinus headache from coming again. But it works every time.
So you were mentioning that you have chronic sinus infection.
Yeah, 25 years now.
Wow. That is... Cause,
a Z-Pak will knock it out for a few weeks, but it comes right back.
So I would suggest, if you haven't already, Northwestern actually has a sinus center.
Yeah.
So it's multidisciplinary. So they have ear, nose, and throat specialists and allergists. So they both take a look at your problem and tackle it from both the structural aspect, which is the ear, nose, and throat.
I've tried lots of stuff.
Yeah. No, the sinus center, sometimes people end up on the wrong track as far as what's causing it. They think it's allergies when it's actually a structural problem and vice versa. So
I've tried structural stuff. I've tried allergy stuff. I've tried my...
one more. We'll try one more. Let's try.
Whatever. Sure, throw something else at me or yank something else out of there. Whatever.
Oh, that happens too.
Oh, yeah. But I got Roto-Rooter the one time.
Oh, boy.
But it let more allergens in that way.
Sorry. Ooh. I'm not long-term chronic sinuses, but I know pretty quickly. I went to get my x-rays done at my dentist's office, and they asked me if I was prone to sinus infections, because they showed me that I'm very fibrous when it comes to all those connections. Are there people that
it's
are more...
It's supposed to be a hollow space with air in it.
Oh.
And so there shouldn't be, gunk and scar tissue and fibers in there.
Yeah, so I'm very fibrous all through my cheeks.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to. That's just how you live.
Probably not going to go anywhere.
No. I've been prone to sinus infections since I was little. I had eye infections a lot when I was a kid. Like every time it would get cold, one eye would just swell up.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's just part of the structure, which is what you were talking about.
Everything's all connected up there. So.
But I can tell as soon as my teeth start hurting, I'm like, oh, there it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. And it's scary because, I mean, you get dizzy too. I don't know if you ever have those, you can't, if I bend over too fast, like put on a shoe or something.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally.
I'm like, wow, okay, yeah.
Or you just kind of feel a fluid rush.
Oh, that pressure.
Yeah, pressure and
my
fatigue.
Ears.
Lots of fatigue.
Yeah, that is exhausting. So I try to get ahead of it as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So that's that. Do you ever have, Tom, any sinus issues?
I had one sinus infection once, but what my real chronic thing is I get cluster headaches.
Oh.
Also known as suicide headaches because it is intense.
You'd rather die.
Yeah, it's as many people know, it only happens for a certain period of time, usually about annually, and it's all dependent on who you are, but it's like, please put a drill in my head bad, because I just want to release the pressure. And I know sinus headaches can be very much similar to that, migraines as well. I just, any sort of chronic condition when it comes to pain is just the absolute worst.
Yeah, I used to get 2 to 3 migraines a month from pretty much since high school until about 7 years ago, actually. I found this, I would try everything, and it got to the point where they were getting progressively worse. If I could get ahead of it, if I knew, I would have the auras. So you have this like flashes around your peripheral vision, and I would know that it was coming so I could get the Excedrin on board, the mm-hmm. Excedrin maximum strength migraines, and would be okay. But it got to the point where I couldn't get ahead of it, and if I tried to take anything, I would start vomiting. I mean, like my entire digestive system, because it does affect everything.
Oh yeah,
would screw it up. And I remember the last major one I've had, like maybe in the last 7 years, the 4, maybe 5. But what I found was what worked for me, and this is different for everybody, was the eat for your blood type diet. Mm. I hardly ever, like once in a while, I have a little bit of pork, but I hardly ever eat red meat. I'll take a bite of somebody's. Mm. There are certain foods, and I try to you know figure it out. I can feel like I can feel sort of the beginnings of one if I eat too much of certain types of food.
Yeah.
So
identifying your triggers is the first step.
Yeah. Well, I'm Rh negative, A positive. A negative? No, I'm A negative, Rh positive. Whatever the one I have to have the Rogam shot for.
Oh,
Rh negative.
Rh negative.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I'm saying things that sound for.
I don't even know my blood type.
Oh,
see, I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
Donate blood,
mm-hmm.
and you'll find out for free. Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't let me for so long because I lived in the UK during an outbreak of mad cow disease.
Oh, and that explains
like,
a lot.
Yeah. They were,
wow.
This bull's gone mad. And,
that's what you get for eating cow's brains for breakfast. Come on.
Oh, well, they're so delicious.
I know, right?
You fry it, you tie it in another animal's stomach, and you just, you know, food in the UK, I don't know when the last time you guys have been to the UK. It's improved a lot, but not by much.
Oh, boy.
You throw an egg on top. You know?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, that reminds me. I got to post that article, the recipe for how to do soft-boiled eggs.
The recipe. Listen, the recipe. The Frenchy. Recipe. They're called food hacks.
Yeah, you can brine it in some soy sauce, but I'll post that as soon as I can. The finding out your blood type, I think, can be helpful for some people. Plus, it's part of that genealogy we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier. So Rh negative, so I don't know if I'm going to explain this well, but it means that my antibodies will attack a foreign, like when I was pregnant, women who are Rh negative have to have the Rogam booster in order to make sure they can carry a pregnancy to full term, because otherwise the body attacks it like it's a tumor. Kind of
correct.
Yes. We didn't know until they don't do the Rogam shot until after the 20th week. Might even be a little bit later than that. And I this is something entirely separate, but I suspect based on some of the just perfect, like sort of primary research I've done with a lot of moms who have kids with disabilities, sometimes I just think that there's got to be more research done for the second child, because it seems like there's a lot of kids firstborn are okay, and there seem to be you know more women who are finding some issues with the second child.
And they're Rh negative?
In the Rh negative pregnancies,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So what I mean
I
is that...
I hadn't heard that.
So there... Well, I don't think there's any research on it, but okay. I remember talking to one of the neurologists.
It's your observation,
my observation,
though.
Yeah. Because the Rogam... Because the brain is everything it's ever going to be in the first trimester, and the Rogam booster can't be given until the second trimester. So you have to have it in the second trimester for the first child, and you have to have it again after delivery, and then you have to have it again during the subsequent pregnancies. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's something there. So if you are pregnant with somebody, if you're Rh negative and you get pregnant with somebody who's a different blood type, that's when it's an issue.
Right. So
yes.
So some of the child's blood sneaks into your bloodstream and your body recognizes it as foreign and
right.
creates antibodies against it. And so the Rogam actually blocks that the detection of the positive antigen on blood cells. And so on the next pregnancy, your body's going to think that baby is foreign.
Right.
And is going to try to attack it like it's a tumor or something.
Right. So because Declan's, it's a part of his brain didn't fully form, and that happens in the first trimester. So I'm curious about that, but I don't know
that's certainly, it's interesting that you made that observation, and you know, you might have struck on something. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, I don't have a degree in any sort of medicine, but I'll just throw that out there. And we were talking about sinus infections as Adam and I and Tom was talking about cluster headaches. You know, a lot of the folks here have been, there's something running rampant through the station. I don't know if it's a cold or a flu, and that's mostly because people don't necessarily know the difference between a cold and a flu, what the symptoms are,
right.
what the treatments are.
Sure. So, and it's helpful to get an idea of where you are, because there are some things that you should come and see the doctor for, because we can help you. And there are some things where, you know, giving you an antibiotic isn't going to make any difference whatsoever, and it just breeds resistance amongst the bacteria. So, you know, a regular cold, you know, we've all had a cold, maybe a low-grade fever, sore throat, scratchy throat, cough, runny nose, congestion. And, you know, you feel uncomfortable, but you're able to go to work. You're able to do your usual activities. Maybe you go to bed a little earlier. And, you know, it'll last a week to 10 days, and it's over. A sinus infection is typically, you know, a cold that lingers and really never resolves. So that's, you know, you can have a lot of the similar symptoms with congestion and some yucky looking mucus coming out of your nose. But after 10 days, it's still there. And, you know, at that point, or it might have even gotten worse. So it seemed to get better initially, and then suddenly it's worse. You might have a fever. You might have a lot of pressure in your sinuses. That can be treated. And that's something to see the doctor for. The flu is another animal entirely. So a flu is going to be similar to a cold, but it's going to be a cold on steroids. So you have a fever, but it's 101, 102. You have congestion, runny nose, and cough, but boy, your cough makes your chest hurt, and you've got a headache, and you got body aches, and you just have such profound fatigue that you can't get out of bed. So I can tell right away when I first walk into an exam room somebody who has a flu, because they're laying down on the exam table. Oh. I call that my positive flu sign.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that can be treated, too. That can be treated with antivirals. The earlier, the better. And frankly, you don't need to come in to see me. If you call my office and you tell our triage nurse your symptoms, and they're classic for the flu, you're going to get that antiviral called in for you over the phone. And it's better that you don't come in and spread the flu around.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Big nod from everybody in the studio. Yes, yes, yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
And then there's strep throat.
Yeah.
Strep throat
is... Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah. That's my bane. I've had strep throat over and over over the years. Really bad sore throat. It feels like you're swallowing razor blades. And really not a lot of other symptoms besides maybe fever. So you don't really have much in the way of sinus or, you know, nasal congestion. And probably the most important thing is you don't have a cough. So there's a triad of symptoms that goes along with the sore throat, swollen glands, fever, and absence of a cough. And probably the most important predictor of whether it's strep or not is the fact that you're not coughing.
Wow.
But we can treat that as well. And that's something you should come in for. That's something that we would verify with testing. And if you're positive for strep, we would want to treat you, because we want to prevent you from having rheumatic fever.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yes, please do that.
Yes. So yes. That's an important one to come in for. So, but yeah, you're run-of-the-mill cold, you know, not so much. If you're able to function, feeling okay. The other thing that might be in the mix would be something like pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And some people get what they call walking pneumonia, or they get pneumonia that's, it's a bacterial infection, but it doesn't quite wipe them out the way you would normally think a bacterial infection would. So significant amount of cough, some shortness of breath. Fever. So those would be things to look for with pneumonia. So, you know, it feels worse than your typical cold. Maybe your appetite's suppressed. Maybe you're more tired than usual, having a harder time getting through your day.
That's all important information. Thank you so much for giving people the heads up.
No problem.
We've been talking to Dr. Kathy Tynes, president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern. Follow her on Twitter at @ktynes. You can also visit isms.org to find out more about the Illinois State Medical Society. And as we mentioned earlier, the website that she recommends is medlineplus.gov. If you've got questions about any of your medical issues, we're also hanging out with Adam Selzer, author, American author, historian. Tour guide is give us the jingle one more time before we go to break.
EFFING Chicago.com. Chicago Tours.
This Saturday, 4 p.m. Yep. It's a great walking tour, a great way to learn more about your city and some of our history with gangsters.
Yep.
When we come back, Thomas is going to be, this is a lot of what we meant to get to, because there's a lot of stories here. What we meant to get to in just a moment on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with the Patty Basket Show.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It ain't had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Do-si-do.
We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, wrapping up with all the stories. These great stories that producer Tom Hush pulled for the show. And you know what? Before we get goofy, let me just touch on something we didn't have a chance to talk about, which I left in the bottom of the pile, and I apologize, Tom. Since we have Dr. Kathy Tynes here, I want to find out a little bit about, you know, there have been a lot of conversations in the last few weeks about the, you know, resurgence of measles around the country in various places in particular, where there are a lot of anti-vaxxers. There was testimony today from a young man whose parents were anti-vaxxers. He, as an adult, is now getting vaccinated. And he said that his parents' number one source of information was Facebook, and which is, you know, is just a, you know, what did you call it? A confirmation bias.
Correct,
right.
Yes.
So whatever it is you believe, you're just going to keep seeing the same stories. Whatever you click on, you're going to see it over and over and over again. Tom gave me a story also asking about whether or not some adults might need to be re-vaccinated against measles.
So there's a small subset of people who were born between 1963 and 1967 whose vaccine might not have been as effective as the modern vaccine. And so it's recommended that they get a booster of their MMR.
All right. So that's important information. So find out, check with your doctor, and see if it's something you should look into.
So people born between 1957 are assumed to be immune, and they were never vaccinated.
Okay.
But just because of the prevalence of measles at the time, because there were several major measles outbreaks during their lifetime, during their childhood. However, if you're concerned, or if you have a known exposure, or you live in an area where there's a low vaccination rate and you want to confirm whether or not you have antibodies, we can draw a blood test to see if you actually have the measles antibody, and if you don't, we can vaccinate you now.
And for the general edification of everyone, one more time, tell us why vaccinations are so important.
Well, measles in particularly is a highly infectious disease. It's got a 90% contagion rate. So it can be spread by airborne, by droplets. You could be in an elevator with somebody who has measles and catch it from them. So it's just such a highly contagious and infectious disease, and can have long-term consequences for people who survive it. And it can cause death. So, you know, we prevent these infectious diseases by immunizing a critical mass of the population. Not everybody's vaccine takes, so not everybody forms antibodies, but because most of the people who get the vaccine do form antibodies, you develop what's called herd immunity, so that if one person in a community gets measles, the people around them are vaccinated, they don't catch it and spread it around. Mm-hmm. But if you have a critical mass, if you have less than 95% of the population vaccinated, then you start to see outbreaks. So it passes from person to person to person. So, you know, we talked about some of these outbreaks that we've seen in Disneyland and in Seattle and Portland. And these are people were in the same gym.
Yeah.
Or they were on the same ride in Disneyland, and that's how they caught the measles. And they might not have ever seen the person that gave them the measles. They can just touch something that has their secretions on it still and catch the measles from that way. So it's really frightening to think that our vaccination rates are dropping. There are 20 states that currently have laws in their legislatures that are pending to increase exemptions to mandatory vaccines. So it feels like we're kind of stepping in the wrong direction.
It does seem that way. Well, thank you so much for always keeping us well informed. And again, that's Dr. Kathy Tynes, president of the Illinois State Medical Society, assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern, and follow her on Twitter at @ktynes. Adam Selzer in studio now. I don't know if you've seen, you know, I don't know if this is medical in nature, but something that's gone viral is that the folks are throwing cheese at their babies, which is the new viral challenge. They're just seeing if slices of American cheese will stick to their babies. Tom, is this something you've enjoyed watching online?
In a morbid sort of way, because like, if I know it sounds terrible, like throwing slices of Kraft singles at your children. I know, But most of the time, these kids, the parent throws it gently. It just kind of lands on their forehead, and then the kid like picks up and eats it, and it's kind of adorable. Chrissy Teigen has lambasted this and said, "No, this is cruel." Mm-hmm. And I get
it. In my day, they used to throw sandwich supplies at us all day long. Lettuce, mayo. Tomatoes, mayo. I was slathered in mayo every single day. Not to mention the cheese. We dreamed of getting just cheese.
Especially if that was a hard roll. It was 2 days old. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I still find pimentos in my belly button from time to time.
It's just a strange phenomenon. It reminds me of when I used to work in a grilled cheese restaurant here in the city of Chicago. I won't say the name, but you probably know what
it
is.
Is there more than one grilled cheese restaurant?
Yes,
I'd be shocked. Yeah, but that's how we used to get our kicks, is that if it was really dead that day, and it was up by Northwestern, we would just like kind of take slices of cheese and throw it at each other.
I think that's phenomenal. All right. Well, if you got the cheese, I don't know. Why is it just babies? They would just throw cheese at each other, your dogs, and
that's cheese abuse.
Yeah. Babies in nature do throw cheese at each other. It's how they naturally act.
And one last one, by the way, that was the baby cheese challenge. And Lucky Charms, a flavored beer has sold out. You can now buy it for $450 on eBay. So I want to make sure that you know about that.
I don't know what kind of psychopath would purchase it for like $5.
There you go.
Real dreamer. That's
like
for sure.
An instant hangover.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, also the world's number one bridge player was suspended after failing a drug test.